Good morning with KUAC Local News. I'm Robin. Oil company Hilcorp and one of its drilling contractors each paid more than $25,000 in penalties after a worker was killed last December on one of Hilcorp's rigs in the North Slope. 36-year-old Sean Huber died at the Milne Point field when the rig's operator accidentally opened a set of hydraulic jaws and dropped a 700-pound section of drilling pipe that struck Huber in the head. That's according to the company's internal investigation that was submitted to the state workplace safety regulators. Some 6 months later, Hilcorp paid $25,000 in state-assessed fines for violating a pair of safety regulations. One says employers shouldn't allow rig workers to stand or pass under suspended loads, and another requires appropriate disinfectant to be used after a blood spill. A Hilcorp supervisor told rig workers to clean up after the accident, and some of them weren't wearing gloves, exposing them to blood-borne illnesses. The company's internal investigation found that there were contradictory safety requirements on the rig when it came to workers' exposure to overhead hazards. And it also found that when the rig's operator accidentally dropped the pipe, he was distracted because he was mentoring a colleague. Deb Kelly is a former top official with a state agency that regulates workplace safety. She says the ultimate responsibility for the accident lies with the companies, not the rig operator who unintentionally dropped the pipe.
An employer should never put employees in a position where a moment's inattention will cause a fatality. You have to have as many layers of safety as you can practically apply so that a lot of things have to go wrong before someone gets hurt.
Hilcorp, in a prepared statement, says Hubert's death was a tragic event and that they've worked closely with state regulators to see how they can apply lessons learned. The president signed an executive order yesterday to create a White House task force to work on the problem of murdered and missing American Indians and Alaska Natives. Studies show indigenous women in some regions are killed at a rate more than 10 times the national average. Under the president's executive order, the Operation Lady Justice Task Force will develop protocols to apply to new and unsolved cases and create a team to review cold cases. Alaskan Tara Sweeney, Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs at the Department of Interior, has been appointed to the task force and was in the Oval Office for the signing.
It is aimed at improving the protocols, the communication, and the multi-jurisdictional challenges that our Native communities face.
In advising the White House on forming the task force, Sweeney says Indian Affairs officials held listening sessions across the country to hear directly from victims, family members, and advocates for improving justice in Indian country. Sweeney says the task force is part of an overall ongoing effort, which includes millions of dollars in Department of Justice funds heading to Alaska.
So is this going to put more troopers on the ground or increase public safety? The answer, in my opinion, is we're all working towards that. The president has made a commitment to public safety in Indian country and Alaska Native villages, and you can see that through a series of steps that have been taken so far.
The Operation Lady Justice Task Force will be overseen by Attorney General William Barr and Interior Secretary David Bernhardt. With the census around the corner, Alaskans also have to start thinking about redistricting. Redistricting, or reapportionment, is the task of redrawing Alaska's legislative districts to align with new numbers from the federal census. Alaska has not had it easy. For the last three decades, the last three censuses, Alaska has never settled for the first draft of the redrawn legislative districts. In fact, there's been more than one lawsuit filed about each district map in each of the last three decades. The Alaska Constitution requires a redistricting board to draw those lines, but two decades ago, the Alaska Legislature also created what it calls the Redistricting Planning Committee, which is asked to make initial preparations for the board's work. Its powers include leasing office space for the board, compiling maps and databases, and acquiring redistricting computer software. The committee has been appointed and is holding its first meeting next week at the legislature's Anchorage offices. The constitutionally authorized redistricting board will get going next year. Five members must be appointed by September 1st. There are two appointees by the governor and one each from the House Speaker, Senate President, and Chief Justice. But there's also a requirement that members represent different geographic areas of the state. It has been 1 year since the 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit South Central Alaska. It was November 30th, 2018. The anniversary is this Saturday. Zachariah Hughes has this update.
The first floor of Leslie Dixon's house is filled with piles of stuff.
Yeah, these are just tools and Costco food and you name it, water, whatever you normally put in your garage, propane tank, you know.
Dixon recently had to move the entire contents of her garage here so that workers could tear out its cracked cement floor. So with just a few hours' notice, all the camping gear, shelving, washer, dryer, mini fridge, all of it had to get spread throughout her living room and kitchen. Still, Dixon says this beats staying in a hotel, which she had to do for weeks after her duplex was massively damaged by last year's quake.
It just seemed like the house was falling apart. And then for every aftershock, the house would move. And so it felt very, I was on the couch with my tennis shoes on, sleeping with a flashlight.
The earthquake took a big toll on Dixon and her neighbors, whose slice of West Anchorage was one of the neighborhoods most affected. Clusters of homes here experienced ground failure, and there are still houses with outward signs of damage. Plenty of people in Anchorage came out of the earthquake with relatively little property loss. Some broken plates, cracked drywall, shattered pictures, and home bars. But for more than 4,300 Alaskans, the damage was bad enough to be approved for federal assistance. A segment of those are people like Dixon, who have spent the last year coping with extreme damage and taking drastic financial measures to keep their homes.
It's been a terrible year. I mean, I heard about anxiety. I'm not sure I'd ever experienced it before. This year.
The damage here was so bad and the cost to repair so high that Dixon did the same math that a lot of residents in a similar position were doing after the quake.
I looked at every option just to see if I should foreclose, walk away, what's the cost of demolition. I mean, I looked at all the options, and at the end of the day, it was the best option was just to fix it.
Dixon owns both units of a duplex, living on one side and renting out the other. The whole structure had to be lifted at a cost of around $100,000. To pay for that work, Dixon navigated a patchwork of different federal and local assistance programs. She estimates that for several months, she spent about 15 hours a week just managing all the different convoluted processes. The programs, though, are essential for her to be able to repair her property. Dixon got more than $34,000 from FEMA in direct assistance, which is on the very high end of what individuals are eligible for. But she's still taken on massive amounts of new debt through low-interest federal loans. So far, she estimates that all her repair costs will total about $140,000. According to FEMA, more than $130 million in federal aid has reached Alaska in connection with the November 30th earthquake. The majority of that money, $84 million, is low-interest loans that have to be paid back. This, says Anchorage City Manager Bill Falsey, is what people across the municipality are confronting a year after the earthquake.
In a lot of ways, there was a subset of our population for whom the natural disaster turned into kind of a financial disaster, and we are still going to be feeling our way through that as the FEMA checks dry up and folks may still be in a bad way.
It's not just residential property owners who are still fixing damage from last year. Falsey says municipal buildings and infrastructure are also still being assessed.
We have a few facilities that remain pretty crippled.
In the immediate aftermath of the quake, the city rushed to fix destroyed roads, busted water lines, and direct response efforts out of a 24-hour emergency operations center. For all that work during a federal disaster, the municipality gets to send the U.S. government a bill.
We have submitted to FEMA reimbursement requests for about $40 million.
That number does not include all the repair work that's needed at Anchorage School District buildings, which bear a much higher price tag. The district estimates it needs $151 million. The quake also had a psychological impact on South Central communities that's a little bit harder to quantify. Falsey grew up in Anchorage, but wasn't alive for the 1964 Good Friday earthquake that destroyed whole towns and caused 131 deaths. He's lived through plenty of small quakes, but says this one gave him a different perspective on them.
And in particular, I think of the aftershocks. I think as a guy who went to high school here in Anchorage, I always thought of 1964 as one big earthquake. But now having lived through the 7.1, I think we all understand more viscerally that it is a week-long and months-long event.
The federal disaster will take years to sort out, though Falsey hopes that the bulk of the work will be wrapped up in the coming year. Leslie Dixon, the duplex owner, is a trained lawyer and says she's well equipped to navigate the complicated world of federal disaster aid. She's part of some Facebook groups, though, where people swap their own earthquake horror stories and rebuilding advice. There, Dixon sees much more tragic stories, like a retiree draining her 401k to stay in her home.
Another woman had said she'd given up health insurance for her family to pay for the repairs.
Even though it's meant huge amounts of new debt, anxiety, and a never-ending list of repairs, Dixon says she is grateful she's able to keep her home. She counts herself as one of the lucky ones. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And I'm Robin for KUAC Local News.